No, I need you. You must come and talk. They said, but I think I'm coming to see you tomorrow. So, thank you very much, Commissioner. You're welcome with your team. We have Uwaga Khumalo, is the chair of the commission. Let me pronounce this properly. Financial Fiscal Commission. So, Baba Kumar, you're welcome to this meeting. You can take us through your presentation. You have 5 minutes just to accept members. You have new members. What's your role? How do you come in? So that they are able to ask relevant questions to yourselves. And can then introduce your team. From our side, we have Honorable Nkosi Mandela, and we have Honorable Sain, and we have Honorable Joseph, we have Honorable Youngblood, we have Honorable Fultano, and Honorable Tongwane, and Honorable Ramakhosi and Maxakwane seated there. Yeah, and we have the the CFO of the Department of Agriculture, Fishery and Forestry. We have an advisor of the minister. We then have the other members that got the team from the entities of the department. We have the audit chair persons. They are here with us. They will not be participating. They are observers. They are coming to listen. I hope I've introduced everybody. Commissioner, we are in your hands.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members for the invitation. I would maybe like to first of all introduce the team with your permission that I am with. Sitting to my left is Ms. Sasha Peters. She is our program manager for national budget analysis. And then to my left is Mr. Eddie Rakare, who is our program manager for fiscal policy. And then we've got Mr. Khalid Dawood, who is our program manager for local provincial government budgets. And then Mr. Henry Xtien, next to Mr. Dawood, is our parliamentary liaison officer. So he's based in our Cape Town office. And the two program managers in budget analysis are also based in our Cape Town office, specifically to be able to respond to some of these types of requests from parliamentary committees. Let me, you have instructed, Chairperson, start off by just giving a brief overview of the Financial and Fiscal Commission. The Financial and Fiscal Commission is a statutory independent permanent body in established in terms of Section 220 of the Constitution. It's actually found in Chapter 13. And it functions in terms of the Financial and Fiscal Commission Act, which establishes in terms of the amendment that was made in 2003. It establishes a commission that consists of 9 members, all appointed by the President of the Republic, 2 are nominees of organized local government, 3 are nominees of provincial government, in other words, the 9 provincial premiers must nominate 3 people for the commission, and 4 are national nominees. I'm one of the 4 national nominees. Currently there is 3 of us at the national level. There's 1 vacancy, which is the vacancy of the chairperson. I'm actually the acting chairperson of the Financial and Fiscal Commission and the chief executive officer, and I've been in that position since 2010. It's been a very
long time. That's why I'm saying chair, because I don't person who can act for so long. You're a chair.
there's an issue there. Now, in terms of the mandate, the Commission makes recommendations that are envisaged in Chapter 13 of the Constitution. In national legislation to Parliament, provincial legislatures, and any other organ of state determined by national legislation. Now, I must emphasize this point, that the recommendations of the Financial and Fiscal Commission are primarily recommendations that are made to Parliament to enable Parliament to engage with the executive on financial and fiscal matters that fall within the mandate of the Financial and Fiscal Commission. So, in most cases, people tend to ask me questions about whether, you know, does government or does the Minister of Finance take your recommendations seriously? My response is always, that's not the responsibility of the Commission to engage in that discussion. It's the responsibility of Parliament to engage with the Minister of Finance or with the executive indeed, because our recommendations don't only relate to the Minister of Finance, but they relate to the executive on matters that are of a financial and fiscal nature as determined in the enabling legislation for the Financial and Fiscal Commission. The primary focus is on the equitable division and allocation of nationally collected revenue between and amongst the three spheres of government, and also on any other financial and fiscal matters that the Commission may, on request or of its own undertaking, decide to actually assess and make recommendations on to relevant stakeholders that are prescribed in legislation. Now, this would include matters that relate to legislative provisions or executive decisions that affect either provincial or local government from a financial and or fiscal perspective. In other words, decisions that amend legislation or expand in terms of regulation or circulars that have financial and fiscal implications for provinces and municipalities are of an interest to the Financial and Fiscal Commission in terms of the Act, and therefore if those decisions, if the Commission is not consulted, the recommendations of the Commission are not taken into consideration in implementing such decisions, then those decisions are considered legally invalid in terms of the Financial and Fiscal Commission. So there's quite a strong institution that has been put in the Constitution to avoid situations of what we normally refer to as unfunded mandates. That's the primary purpose of this specific provision, that the Commission is being consulted to make recommendations on some of those kinds of issues. So the Commission is consulted in terms of primarily the Financial and Fiscal Commission Act, the Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act, or the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act. There's a whole list of pieces of legislation that speak to consultation that is required for the, so we can actually supply that for the committee's own interest if we must actually do that. Now, let me then go into the presentation of today. I think it's important that when we look at the performance of a government department, we also look at the environment within which it is actually operating, which provides certain constraints that may actually be faced. I think one thing that is for certain is that the economic and financial crisis that hit South Africa around about 2008-09 has had pervasive outcomes on the South Africa's macroeconomic outlook. So looking forward, the outlook remains one where we still have to be very cautious with what we do. And also what we can almost safely say is that we are still some way from restoring strong and sustainable economic growth rates per annum that are required by the National Development Plan 1. And also we are still a long way off from getting back to where we were when the global economic crisis hit us. It's not that this comes as a surprise. We had done at that particular point some modeling exercises which basically did indicate that the worst case where the recovery of the globe is delayed, then the recovery of the South African economy was also going to be delayed because of the intricate relationship between the South African economy and the rest of the world. And so you can trace the growth path of the South African economy on the basis of what is actually happening to the globe. But one of the lessons that one then learned at that particular point was that while the global economic crisis was an external shock, we then had our own internal shocks, which even ourselves, we had not actually anticipated that would actually happen. So even though we knew that if this breaks, then our recovery will be delayed. We're probably looking at recovery around about 2015, 2016, thereabout. But now because we experienced some other internal shocks that we never anticipated, especially with respect to the strikes that actually took place, then the impact of, on the one hand, the global economic crisis now has to be coupled with the impact of the diplomatic shocks that we never expected. And that basically puts another dimension to the recovery path for the South African economy. So what we are saying is that there is a challenge around this. And in terms of what our expectations for agriculture are with respect to its contribution to domestic products and also its contribution to the national development plan in the future, we have some significant challenges that we will face. Now, one thing that we can say is that the contribution of agriculture as a sector to gross domestic product declined substantially from 1977.1% to 2.2% in 2013. But obviously this is not to say that the importance of agriculture has actually declined. In fact, to the contrary, as we will see that on the export front, agriculture has actually grown substantially. So there's that dynamic that one has to look at. The economy, the cake is growing, so you might have a smaller share, but you still a key contributor to the broader economic survival of South Africa. So the share of exports, we've seen an increase from 3.6% in 2007 to around 5.9% in 2018. That's quite substantial given the subdued economic environment within which the sector. So there's some vibrance in the sector. South Africa also became a member of BRICS, and this opened up some minds for South African agriculture. There's also been quite a substantial increase in exports to SADC countries in particular. Now, there's a challenge which relates to climate change, and we have seen some of the impacts of this over the past 5 years, whether it's floods or it's drought or it's drought caused by floods. So we've had quite a significant number of challenges that the sector must actually be dealing with. Now, the National Development Plan envisages the agricultural sector as one of the key levers for job creation and ensuring food security in South Africa. The plan identified the following objectives for the sector: create 1 million jobs in agriculture, agro-processing and related sectors by 2030, increase investment in new agricultural technologies and research and development, realize the food surplus with one-third produced by small-scale farmers or households, create security of tenure for communal farmers, especially women. The department has aligned its plans over the medium term with the National Development Plan scopes. His main focus over the medium term is on increasing food production by supporting smallholder farmers through the comprehensive agricultural support program. We'll come back to this at some point when we look at the performance of some of these plans. The implementation of food security initiatives, including end care, Ilima Litsima, and the recently established Fetsatlala Food Production Initiative. Implementation of transformation frameworks and the allocation of commercial fishing rights to promote broader participation in the economy. I think there's a general drive to transform the agricultural sector to respond to the population dynamics of South Africa. Now, in terms of employment, one can see that over a long period of time, there has been growth in that sector, and then in the recent past you now seen this downward trend. But what we've seen is that, like, in terms of the most recent results, that downward trend is also now being reversed in terms of the level of service. There is some picking up of employment in the sector that is beginning to take place. Now, there is increased pressure on available income of consumers that relates to food inflation, which has risen faster than the inflation rate. Now, food is a key component of what poor people eat, of what poor people buy, let me put it that way. But poor people, low-income households, spend a relatively high proportion of their income on food and transport, if I were to be blunt about it. Food and transport constitute a very high share of those households compared to other income groups. Now, if we are having this type of a situation, then it means that we have a problem. We have a challenge when it comes to issues of food security. And I think because food security is a right, it does make it imperative that we take a very special focus on agriculture and actually what is actually happening in that sector that might actually reverse this trend that we're seeing in food inflation. In most cases, when you have these kinds of rising prices, it probably means that you're not producing sufficient food. But this is a story that we're actually seeing here, that food inflation is actually increasing. But let me stop there. Just that's the background within which this department is operating. So for bigger questions around each one of those issues, we can come on another day and have a discussion. But that's the background, that's the environment in which we are assessing the department's budget. Let me hand over to Ms. Sasha Peters to take you through the analysis.
Good morning to you, members of the committee and other colleagues. I'll take you through the rest of the slides, starting with the departmental analysis. As you know, the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries is a shared or a concurrent or shared function. And to carry out its responsibilities in relation to the shared function, the department has set up six programs. As listed away, administration, agricultural production, health and food safety, food security and agrarian reform, trade promotion and market access, forestry and fisheries. As you know, there are also numerous entities that report to the minister of the department. But all the activities within this department are centered around achieving the strategic goals of the department, and these relate to increasing the production and productivity in agriculture, forestry and fisheries sectors, enhancing employment and economic growth, food security and sustainable use of resources. Chief, before getting into the actual analysis of the budget spending and performance of the department, we thought it might be useful just to highlight the way in which we conduct our analysis. So generally, the way that we look at budget expenditure performance, we do it on a 6-year 6-year period, so we look 3 years back and 3 years forward up until the end of the current medium-term expenditure framework. And then one of the key aspects of our analysis is that we use real relative to nominal figures. So what you'll find in your budget documentation or the estimates of national expenditure are all nominal figures. They don't take inflation into consideration. Our analysis does do that. So starting with the big picture, this slide outlines the allocations to the department from 2011-12 to 2016-17. And we also provide the real year-on-year growth rate. And we see that between last year and this year, the budget allocated to the department has increased from 6.1 billion to 6.6 billion, and this represents a real increase of 3.1%. However, over the medium term, the allocations to this department are expected to decline, and that's for a couple of reasons. Firstly, as a result of cabinet-approved budget reduction, and then also because of the shifting of a particular function, the Nazna Indigenous Forest, that function has been shifted to the Department of Environmental Affairs, so it's the case of the following function. In line with cabinet-approved reductions, the allocation to this department is set to decline by 335 million over the next 3 years. And then due to the shifting of the function to Department of Environmental Affairs, we'll see about a 60 million reduction in this budget over the next 3 years as well. So that is why you are seeing these declines in the two loss columns right at the bottom of 13.9% and another reduction in 2016-17 of 1.2%. The slides provide an overview of how the department prioritizes its budget. So as I mentioned with the previous slides, activities of the department are organized around 6 programs. The largest program, which consumes just over 50% of the budget, is the Agricultural Production, Health and Food Safety Program. And the reason that it is the largest is because one of the biggest departmental entities sits under that program, the Agricultural Research Commission. And the conditional grants administered by the department also fall, some of them fall under this program, so that's why it consumes the biggest chunk. We also analyze the budget in terms of economic classification, and this allows one to distinguish between different categories of current and capital expenditure. And the bulk of the department's budget is spent via transfers and subsidies. And this is because the department administers 3 conditional grants, which it transfers to the provinces, and also because it manages an array of entities to which it also provides financial support. So the strong growth that you see with respect to transfers and subsidies between 2011-12 and 2013-14, there was a growth of 8%, a real growth of 8%, are due to increases in the Comprehensive Agricultural Support Program grant, and also additional allocations to the Agricultural Research Council and another entity, the UNDESTEPUET Biological Products. The last column shows that all these categories of spend except compensation to employees are set to decline. The reductions are again as a result of these cabinet-approved reductions that I mentioned earlier, and the 1.6% projected increase in compensation of employees is mainly to fund condition improvements in conditions of service. The next slide summarizes spending performance of the 6 programs of the National Department. And the way that we looked at that is we looked at the allocated budget and the proportion that was spent. So overall, the department spent most of its budget, 98.9%. This does represent a reduction relative to the previous year where the department spent 99% of its budget. And underspending is mainly due to incomplete procurement processes, or as noted in the last bullet point, where the poor spending on conditional grant by provinces affect the overall spending of the department. This slide provides an overview of the department's performance in 2013-14, and we fix this by looking at the extent to which the department either achieved, partially achieved, or did not achieve targets it had set for itself. So generally, the department has met about 75% of its targets, and achievement of numerous targets are in progress, like partially achieved. Which raises the question as to whether the targets that are being set are realistic, or is the department moving at a slow pace in terms of meeting these targets? Given that most of the budget was spent, the achievement of targets does not seem to be keeping pace with the spending. Chairperson, we, with your permission, should we skip the slide as the AG presented to the committee?
Okay.
So we also wanted to give an overview of what's happening in the provinces. As mentioned, the Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries Department is a shared function, so the next couple of slides will just provide an overview of the financial management performance of the provincial counterparts to this department, as well as an overview of additional grant performance. I'm sure AG went through the provincial audit outcomes as well, but just to note that whereas in 2003-04 all provincial departments received unqualified opinions, since 2005-06 no provincial Department of Agriculture has obtained an adverse opinion, and since 2006-07 no provincial department has received a disclaimer. So the department administers or is the transfer agent for three conditional grants, the Comprehensive Agricultural Support Program, which aims to support newly established and emerging farmers, particularly subsistence, smallholder and previously disadvantaged farmers. There's the ILIMA LETSEMA grant, which aims to boost food production by helping previously disadvantaged farming communities, and finally the land grant, which aims to improve productivity and sustainable use of natural resources. This slide provides a broad overview of the allocations and growth, real growth rates in the three grants. In monetary terms, the CASP grant is the largest, and we see that this grant, whilst growing significantly between 2011-12 and 2013-14, is set to decline between 2014-15 and 2016-17. The big increase that we saw in the previous period was due to funding implementation of the PESA-CLALA strategy. The other two grants are set to grow by, in the case of Lima Letsema, 4.9% and land care by 2.7%. This slide provides an overview of spending performance of the three grants. So of the allocated amounts to the province of what was spent, cash spending has improved with just under 100% of the total allocation being spent in 2013-14. Following improvements in the spending performance of Lima Letsema in 2011 and 2012, spending performance has dropped slightly in 2013-14. And then of the three grants, the spending of land care grant has been most consistent over the last 4 years. The next couple of slides will zoom into the specific performance of these three grants and the provinces that they are allocated to. So we start with the CASP grant. Generally, provinces spend in excess of 9% of this grant, with a couple of provinces spending their full allocation, and almost consistently so. Those are the Free State, KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo. The poor spending underspending that occurred in this grant with respect to 2012-13 was driven by underspending in the Northern Cape and to a lesser extent the Eastern Cape. When one looks at the reasons driving underspending on the on these grants, consistently the reasons given are delays in the procurement processes, service providers that did not meet their contractual obligations. So for all three grants, consistently other provinces cite those reasons. With the Ilima-Letima grant, Mpumalanga and the Western Cape have shown consistently good spending, with full grant being spent, whereas KwaZulu-Natal spent well between 2010 and 2012. In 2013-14, only 65% of the allocation was spent. Again, the reason cited was poor performance by service providers and delays in procurement processes. With respect to the land care grant, a number of provinces again showing a consistent trend of good spending over the entire period reviewed. The Eastern Cape improved in 2013-14. Previous underspending is noted between 2010 and 2012, and the reason for this spending was contractor challenges and the procurement issue. And then in 2013, 15.8 million was meant to be transferred to the Eastern Cape in respect of this grant, but only 12.6 million was transferred, and the balance was not transferred due to non-compliance by the Eastern Cape with the national grant framework. Actually, back in 2007, the FSC recommended that some of these grants be merged into one, and the rationale for that recommendation was due to overlapping objectives of these grants and also the poor spending performance that we noted at that point in time. The Commission was of the view that should these grants be merged, it would reduce firstly the administrative burden on provinces, and secondly it could lead to improvements in the efficiency of spending. At that point, well, the recommendation was not supported by government, but what our analysis shows is that spending performance within certain provinces remains poor, particularly on the CASP grant. 187.6 million was cut from that grant over the existing medium-term expenditure framework to give effect to cabinet-approved reduction. But the reason for cutting on that grant was because of underspending. Now we see that money is being taken from the cash and reprioritized towards the Fetsatlala food production program. So what we are seeing is continued implementation of numerous and existing and underperforming initiatives and the establishment of some new programs that again will lead to more overlapping of objectives. So we believe that there's a need for greater synergy and coordination with respect to these grants to achieve results. We also provided a snapshot on the entities, but the AGA covered this with you. I can skip those if you agree. Okay, so there are six entities reporting to the minister, and in the case of all except for UNDIS report, the department makes a financial contribution to the operations of those entities. This slide details the transfers by the department to the entity and the amount of that transfer that was spent. So, we as UNDIS support usually does not receive a transfer. We included it here because we see that there was an amount of 96 million in 2013-14 that was allocated to fund a particular project, which is the building and modernization of vaccine production facilities equipment. This slide just graphically illustrates that spending performance of the entities, again looking at what was transferred and the proportion that was actually spent. And we see that the National Agricultural Marketing Council and the Perishable Products Export Control Board have consistently spent the transfers allocated. The Marine Living Resources Fund showed significant underspending in 2012-13, and then in 2013-14, 55% of the allocation to this entity was deferred to 2014-15. So that is why if you look at the Marine Living Resources Fund, the columns there, you'll see only 45% spent, but that's because an amount, a portion of it was deferred. So the reason that the the deferment took place was due to poor performance in respect of underspending on working for fisheries program. According to the entity, this happened due to deferred funds from previous financial years, affecting the ability to spend budget. So now we are again seeing deferment, which may again affect the spending performance of the entity in the next year. Okay, this one just in terms of some concluding remarks. As my chairperson indicated, the National Development Plan envisages a significant role for the sector to play in terms of creating employment and ensuring food security. We have noted some pockets requiring attention. There's been progress on certain fronts, for example, in turning around contribution to employment, but there are some aspects that require attention. So, for example, the budget of the department is generally being spent, but then achievement of targets is not keeping pace with that. We also think that the department could play a stronger oversight role with respect to its provincial counterparts. You see continued reasons of poor procurement processes, issues with contractors being raised as reasons for underperformance. So what role can the department play in supporting the provinces? And then in relation to internal controls, I'm sure the AGA is this, the department needs to put measures in place to curb irregular expenditure. They also need to ensure that targets are specific, measurable and verifiable, and they need to carry out a risk assessment and implement a risk management strategy. We've also included previous agriculture-related recommendations as an annexure that the committee members may find useful, and I'm sure we could arrange another date if there's a need to go through it in more detail. Thank you.
Yes, I'm not sure whether it we can keep them to proceed with them because we taking advantage that you are here and the majority of the members are new. Yeah, so can we...
We've divided the recommendations that we've made in terms of... So earlier this year, when the Commission responded to the 2014 Division of Revenue Bill, we had noted that the allocation to this department had declined, and the main reason driving that decline in the allocation was due to underperformance. So the view of the Commission is that the sector should explore how it can perhaps leverage private sector partnerships. How can it improve its spending capacity so that it's better able to absorb available funds? How can it improve coordination with other sector departments so that existing duplication in terms of operations and activities is also removed? So since then, our analysis shows that there's still underspending within the department. It's not an issue that has disappeared. When we presented again our response to the 2014 appropriation bill, we reiterated these aspects and again noted that there's a need to improve planning and procurement processes within this department and its provincial counterparts. When we responded to the 2011 Division of Revenue Bill, we had reiterated what we had mentioned in 2007, that these grants were too small to be administered alone and that there needed to be a merging of these grants that would create one big program focusing on achieving the outputs. And again, the issue that we raised persists. When we tabled our submission for the 2015-14 Division of Revenue, annually we table reports in Parliament. We made four recommendations related to the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. And the first was that the department should strengthen its ability to enforce the conditions in the grant framework, to ensure better oversight of provinces so that spending and performance of agricultural conditional grants can be improved. And here we specifically recommended that norms and standards be developed to assess the performance of provinces and that five-year evaluations of conditional grants be institutionalized. Government, in terms of the legislation, government needs to respond to our recommendations. But with respect to these recommendations, because it was tabled in the year, the response will come when the minister tables the next year's budget in February next year, in 2015. So that is why, with respect to this, the response, it's still in the process of being finalized. The second recommendation was that the commission recommended that special focus be put on improving the operations of different food security programs, especially agriculture, the expanded public works program and school nutrition program, which accelerate reduction in household food security without necessarily increasing program expenditure. Our view was that areas that can yield improved results include better joint planning and streamlining procurement processes with the assistance of the recently established Chief Procurement Officer. We also recommended that government clarify the legislative mandate and responsibility of municipalities in relation to food security. And in this regard, we recommended that the department develop a policy on urban food security with concrete proposals on how such a mandate will be funded. And this is because currently food security is not seen as a competence of municipalities and therefore cannot be funded. Finally, as part of the 2015-16 Division of Revenue, we recommended that the terms of reference for the committee to review the agricultural conditional grants be finalized without delay, and that the review should be comprehensive in scope and should include assessing the value chain of conditional grants and unlocking operational constraints, especially in relation, again, to planning, procurement, comprehensive smallholder support, cash flow and monitoring and evaluation. We also make recommendations around key stakeholders that need to be invited and which should form part of the committee. Back in 2011, when we made recommendations for the 2012-13 Division of Revenue, we recommended that municipality develop their own climate change mitigation and adaptation strategies and put in place plans for climate change as part of the IDP processes. And furthermore, that government should provide support in this respect to municipalities over a three-year period. And this should be it should be a differentiated approach in terms of the support provided. We should look at the different types of municipalities by both location and capacity. Government responded, and what they officially said was that they are already undertaking a number of initiatives that will assist municipalities in planning for the impacts of climate change. The second recommendation we made in 2011 was that government should consider providing municipalities with performance-based conditional grants that would reward or incentivize actions that are environmentally efficient and responsive to the adaptation and mitigation challenges of climate change. We also advised as to what the design of the grant should take into consideration. Government's response was that there is poor uptake of existing incentive grants, so in essence, creating another incentive grant may not be the best way to achieve outputs in this regard. With respect to rural development, on the next slide, we recommended that the governance and institutional arrangements for rural development across the 3 years of government needs to be clarified urgently, as this is critical for planning, budgeting, and implementation of rural development programs, we recommended that the functional mapping of all rural development activities be undertaken and taken with specific responsibilities assigned to each sphere of government. Still on the issue of rural development, we recommended that the fiscal framework for rural and agricultural development must be reviewed. In particular, government should merge current conditional grants, as I had mentioned earlier, into a comprehensive agriculture and rural development finance program that should be administered by one department. We believe that that will improve the focus, targeting and impact. It will also reduce transaction costs in the administration of these grants. This recommendation that we made as part of our submission for the 2010-11 Division of Revenue related to water and sanitation, we included it because we thought it may be of relevance for the committee. What we recommended is that there must be a review of the three basic water and sanitation subsidy as well as a review of water tariff structures to ensure that the shortcomings implicit in the current subsidy system do not outweigh the benefits. Our view was that there is no coherent oversight framework for how water service authorities manage trade-offs in the design and determination of water tariffs. Government agreed with that proposal for the review of water tariff structures. Also, in 2010-11, we recommended that government consider establishing an independent national water regulator that would report to Parliament, and we gave ideas on what the functions of such a regulator may entail. Government agreed with that recommendation, subject to issues around cost and affordability being explored. I think this is the last recommendation that we made as part of our submission for the 2011-8 Division of Revenue, and that relates to the merging of these grants to ensure better spending performance and impact. And as I mentioned earlier, government did not support that recommendation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for the presentation, Commissioner, and your team. I'm now going to allow members to raise questions. If there are any questions. Honorable Stein, Honorable Fetana, Honorable Ramukwasi, and Honorable Nakakwa.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the Commission for your presentation. Chair, unfortunately, I missed the first part of the acting chair. The chair, acting chair, can just tell us since when he's been acting, and maybe it will also relate to my question, which came out of the last sentence or the last slide we talked about. I want to ask, and I didn't read the act that governs you, but I just tried to look into the Constitution quite quickly. I'm quite concerned, Chairperson, regarding if recommendations have been made. Obviously, Cabinet can decide what they look at and what they don't. But there must be a reason why this Commission is there. I just wanted to talk about the last one on the conditional grants, the recommendation that the conditional grants put into one basket. Because I think we found it on oversight consistently, where the provinces specifically said that they find it difficult because national tells them you must put so much in this program and so much, but that's not the need on the ground. And maybe, Chair, that's the reason why we have this problem where we see the budget being spent, but the outcome is not there. And if you allow me, I just want to make one example. I've made it in the past, but I don't think to this committee. One of my neighboring farms is a land reform farm. The person there farms with dorper sheep. Now, dorper sheep, you don't really shear. You just cut the hay every now and again. But it's not like the reno that produces wool that you shear and you actually get an income from it. The department came and bought him a shearing shed, a massive shed, to a massive amount. That was not his need. He can't use that. But he actually, I came and bought the shed. His knee was totally, something totally different. But they told him, that's what we need to do because that's what the funding can give you. And that's the problem. It's bottom down and it doesn't assist our people on the ground. So my question, and I'm maybe it's an unfair question, and I will go read that and see what from our side we can do. What does it help to make these recommendations if, you know, you keep on making them, and what is your powers or your arm or your leverage that is it us, is it when we come to us and we can push from our side, although we don't make policy, we do oversight, but we can propose, and I just, so it's a long-winded question, but to say, how can we help to ensure that when we see things and then go on oversight, and even provinces tell us that it's a problem, but the story doesn't change on a national, how do we assist each other that we make this work? Chairperson, and linked to that, and I think most of my questions are linked to policy and your role, because many times we see that something is put on table, on paper, but it won't work in practice. And I want to take another example, just because yesterday I received the answer back. We asked the question, one of our colleagues, to the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, and you mentioned them. Do they have the budget to implement the new opening of land plans? They said no. What was the budget? 126 billion or something is the proposed amount. So if we get answers like that, you make recommendations on issues, and we can see clearly there's going to be a massive problem. Where do we need to strengthen your hands and our hands and to ensure delivery takes place? So there's a gap somewhere that I need to find. Then just on certain slides there, I'm extremely concerned that we are going to cut on cost. Even if it was a recommendation from Cabinet, because that's actually, and I want to mention again, yesterday there was findings or over the weekend, but it was just being confirmed again that 13 million people every day in South Africa go to bed hungry. So if the grant that's supposed to look after small scale farmers is going to be cut because of understanding, and maybe also the fact of that there's no proper planning for that. Can you just make recommendations again? Since 2006, I'm constantly making the same recommendations and nothing happens. I like most of your recommendations. I think when we do oversight and then you see the things, it's practical examples of how it will make life better for people that I don't see. So, I'm sorry, I don't really have a specific question. I'm just frustrated that I can see things kind of thank you, Chair.
All right, thank you.
Honorable Sultan.
Thank you. Questions I have. As much as I'm almost equally frustrated as my colleague. Okay. On the early stages of your presentation, this is what this question of mine is based on. What are the most prevalent risks that threaten your effectiveness as a committee to deliver on your mandate? Is it political environment, politics at play, or is it the economic environment? The reason I'm asking this is because I have now, for the first time, come face to face with the people I've been longing to talk to for over 10 years. The gentleman in the blue suit, there was my CEO at Ndinga or Atamo Development Agency, Mr. Wakawa. And I constantly asked him, why is it that local government always gets small change from the national fiscus when there is so much a need for services right on the ground. I can see the national roads that are being built by national departments and so on. But why staff local governments? That's why I'm saying you've made my day. This is why that I was able to be here. Now, obviously that is influenced by a number of factors. Second question is, how will this year-on-year budget reduction impact on the department's ability to create jobs? Got a target of a million jobs by 2018. They were talking about a year-on-year reduction in business. What are the other counterfactors that can be used by the department to create jobs in spite of the reduction? And a follow-up question on that one, automatically, is what is the cost of establishing a single sustainable job in the agricultural sector? I know the motoring sector, for instance, is going to keep you for 2 million rands just to establish one job. That's the analysis I got from one expert at some point. But in the agricultural sector, I have my own calculations. I want to convey with what you will learn, provide us an answer. Third question. Martin has consistently underspent this grant. What are the reasons perhaps for that, according to your own findings?
I was going to virtually ask this lady who was here a little earlier if you can actually submit this.
Last question. Who and on what basis thinks that food security is not a mandate of local governments? When I was working for local government up to 2012, in a SALGA meeting, Eastern Cape, there was a circular, I think it was circular 58 of 2011 or something, which purported to become, was said to be coming from Treasury, to say that it is not the function of local government to concern themselves with agriculture per se. And they said the instrument that has been used by government in this case is an administrative instrument. It's not a legislative. And fought the case and faced my then subsequently, or not Mr. Okalana. And I said, this is just an administrative measure, as much as it may be coming from Treasury. Why play local government offside when it comes to food production, when the mandate in the Constitution says a mayor may decide on a given program when they see the need? Why specifically exclude agriculture? And this links up with my first question. Are this political consideration, is somebody just playing games with poor people to say agriculture should not be your concern? And then in the same case, we keep on saying agriculture should be the main driver of the economy. That's why my question was, is it politics or is it economic considerations? Thank you very much.
I need. I'm not putting you in a tight spot, you know, but as I said, it made my day. I've met people I've been wanting to meet for the past 10, 11 years. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Just one question. On the ground, Commissioner, you spelled out what is expected from the Department of Agriculture in relation to the National Development Plan. The food security and employment. But you also spoke about the economic downturn and how it affected the economy of the world and the country. And we also had our own shocks, which in my view are anticipated shocks, because you mentioned strikes. facts don't come unexpected. But that's not the issue. The issue is if we are expected to deliver in such a way expected in the NDP, and we have those, so to speak, unexpected problems in our economy. From your handle or from the knowledge you have, what must we do as a country how can we improve, how can we cushion such issues that are unexpected? I'm just trying to get your view on this one, because there is the problem that we have in the country economically. I said one, not there, two more. Very short. I know when the chairperson looks at you like that. She wants you to finish. On your the budget spent achievement slow. I think it's somewhere. Here is the budget, but we understand. If I think it's human who was raising that, I think generally is the problem in departments. Here is budget. Here is what is expected for us. So the reason why I'm raising this is because it's related to what we are here about as a democratic government to deliver services to the people. So but I'm not sure where it is. I think it's no conclusion of mine, if I'm not making a mistake. And yeah, it's no conclusion of mine on page 21. Budget general spend of achievements of targets is low. Can we elaborate on that? And maybe if at the FFC you can, it's a very unfair question for me to pose. But since we are discussing what is your view, what can we do? Maybe you have some views to make. Because I'm not very sure if they are reflected in the recommendation. Hopefully you understand what I'm trying to work here. The last one will be, it's related because it's a conditional country. It's province. This is something that we need to interrogate. And maybe it's a comment. I don't think it's a question. Views are expected. Because we disperse funds to provinces, if you like, for specific purposes. And nothing is happening. Because for me, again, this is linked to service delivery. Because particularly the department, the committee, the department that we're oversighting, if we want to do justice to ensuring that our people, South Africans, particularly those who are poor, are put at another level, which is a better level, I think we need to do something around the conditional level. It's a problem. I know this is what the chairperson of the committee has been dealing with when we meet with the committee. But FFC that can just, because you are dealing with a number of departments. You are dealing with a number of departments. Maybe children of 8 years on this one. This is quite critical for me. Because the budget that we have, whatever sand that we have, that we allocated partners, must ensure that what is in the NDP and what is in the growth path and what is in the manifesto is adhered to, so that the intended purpose is met. Thank you very much.
Thank you, members. Let me add questions. And let me start by joining members to welcome your presentation. And start by saying that for the first time, I agree with Honorable Spin that we agree with the recommendations, your recommendation, like very not upset. Yeah. My question would be more broader, Chair, that your work at the FFC, my understanding is that it helps government to have a fiscal policy that responds to the needs of the people on the ground. And through yourself, you are able to do research in terms of to assist government to say that the areas of focus for you to be able to achieve a particular objective, as you said yourself, can be achieved if you have to focus on these areas. there's been a 2003 decision of the head of Little SADC, which says that all African countries should budget 10% of their budget to agriculture. But if you look at the budget, there's reduction, which you are saying is caused by underspending. my challenge is that, you see, people that we represent, they don't understand this language. That a provincial or national treasury, if we can, a national treasury is like any other department in terms of ordinary citizens. If you are able to fix your system, therefore you should actually reduce the budget for the community, but to reduce the provision of service delivery. That is what it means. And how then do we, as partners, because I believe we are partners with ourselves, for us to make sure that indeed there is service delivery, how do we as partners work together towards realizing that looking at our country, indeed, historically, agriculture has been inputting substantial in terms of the growth of the economy, our GDP, and the creation of jobs. And now the NDP is even directing us to take a particular shape. But you don't see government spreading itself towards that. And one of the things that I'm not sure what your relationship with the Public Service Commission, because there is a contradictory interest in this. Public Service Commission has a responsibility to make sure that public service does their job, but even the structures of government are responding to the needs of communities. But I've realized that even when we raise, like now we're saying we need that 10%, but you might have Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fishery, which might
see the opportunity of expanding the structure, taking the money for the development to employ more people. So this employment creation doesn't mean that we expand properties, but it for me it seems there is no understanding in terms of government that we are talking about creation of employment for us to expand the public service, such that we take the money that's supposed to go to service delivery and have a lot of human capital who are not actually doing anything. Because one of the reasons that you have government that does not deliver is the duplication of work. Like if you look at rural development, we have somebody who's dealing with agriculture in rural development. Ask ourselves, how does it do agriculture in rural development? Though land and rural development are interrelated. But the other thing that I want to agree and concur with you is on the rural development, because it's a national function. It's not even concurrent function. But you don't see the coordination of government in terms of even the rural development strategy that has been developed by national government. You go to provinces, they've got their own things. You go to local municipalities, they go to their own things. And which is becoming a problem. I'm not sure whether we, as we partner with yourselves, looking at, because my belief is that, as you've been introducing yourself, you said, I'm reporting to Parliament, and therefore Parliament needs to make sure that these recommendations are implemented in government. And for me, we should start from there. One of the things that I agree personally, which is a very good recommendation, is the merging of the grants. In reality, is that, but we're told that the department has started the process. But personally, I'm worried about the speed or the pace that they've moved with, because you have targets that are not waiting for you. You need to get them implemented. And we'll work with you to make sure the department indeed, with working with the National Treasury, they actually merge the grants, because it will be for the benefit of our people. Particularly, you look at even the, as you are saying, within the food security policy, you have various programs which needed to be implemented. And that's why you don't get this weather strategy or plans being implemented, because in their thinking, you see, we're dealing with officials who, in their thinking, if the president pronounced something, they want new budget. So they don't have a thinking that this is the same thing what they say, it's just you need to change the focus. And I want to agree with you that one of the things that we have to work on is to looking at the social grants that we have, because they are occupying a very big space in the budget of the country. And departments like of agriculture can play a very critical role to offload dependent on grants, particularly the one for the child care. If you get these mothers to become productive, then you can reduce the system. So unless government starts to work like that, we cannot, because we have the fiscal that actually is tight. Whether we like it or not, our fiscal is very tight, such that you are unable to do as you wish. You have to work to live within your means. But generally, the challenge of the value for money is a problem in this country, which we should actually work together to make sure that department does that. well, I'm impressed by your recommendation. I don't know why it's not being implemented. And we want to, speaking on behalf of the committee, that these are very good recommendation. We have to make sure that they get implemented. So we don't have to go and ask any permission from some board members. We must fight that they get implemented, because it's towards the benefit of our communities. And you know, the interesting thing, Commissioner, is on, I don't know how Treasury, because probably you oversee in them, or you work with them closely. Treasury, after every pronouncement or policy pronouncement by the cabinet or by the president, you don't see them giving it a better context within the monetary language. And if our department, for instance, the one for federal, the response was that go and reprioritize. But there's been a recommendation that make this grant. It was going to be, and now you even see, even the target that the president has put forth publicly announcing that they are targeting 1 million hectares to be cultivated, is not going to be reached, because already the allocation in terms of the funds does not speak to that. But if you have again treasury that actually is able to assist departments to say, this money, if you utilize this way, and you can then get the 10% from rural development, because the president put a target which is agricultural mandate, but money is allocated within other departments. No one is coordinating those resources towards the particular objective, which is a problem. And of course, because departments are competing, they are competing in their nature. So somebody must retain to be a teacher or a minister. So, but somebody needs to get things in one place and say, this is how we want to see them working. And my view is that you have the presidency and treasury who can do that. But you don't see that things coming out, which is a worrying factor. And I'm not sure how through yourself, as you advise treasury, you can then be able to raise some of the pertinent issues in terms of how do they put this, take cognizance of the pronouncement. Because, you know, we can't have two presidents or three presidents. If they have failed to assist the president before he pronounced, it shouldn't be a burden of the society. Because their role as technical people is to assist the president to make pronouncements that has what financial implication. So, and there is budget in place to do that. This thing of saying president announced there's no budget, it's something that kills this country. And then I'm not sure through yourself how then do we work together, because obviously maybe they will understand your language, because you can speak to them, use the financial language, they will understand it better than us as a committee. Some of these things have been raising with treasury to say, you cannot just allow president to say, and you know, poor president, starting from President Mandela, you know, who just said we must do this thing. Nothing is happening. There was this thing of building a public service which responds to the needs of people. President Mandela called it, he was calling them agents of change, or his, and Honorable President Thabo Mbeki was talking about public service of a special type. President Zuma is saying a public service of a case of something like that. So, but you could see that they are trying to say something is not right, and the technical part of this government has not actually
assisting government to realize their objectives. So I'm not sure through yourselves, Commission, how do we work together to make sure that things fall within the places and people start to do the right thing with the little. Because if you compare ourselves with other countries, even though our budget is little, looking at the history where we come from, but we're still in a better position to respond to the challenges that we have in the country. Besides all the economic challenges, global crisis that we've raised, we can still do better. The last thing is on climate change. Because my worry is that even if we speak about it, you don't have departments which make proper researches to say what is it that if these things happen, what then would be our response in terms of effect. And I want to agree with you, with fishery, we still have to do a lot of work in terms of, particularly in terms of transformation and making sure that as you transform the sector, you don't actually realize the decline in terms of job creations. And so, which is going to be, transformation is you know, it's not an easy process, but we have to have it. But how then do we make sure that it doesn't destabilize the economic growth in the country? Actually, it's responding process. So let me stop there. And Commissioner, allow you to respond. Some of us just a comment, and your report is very helpful. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, for the questions. I will try to respond to as much as I can, and then I will probably ask Sasha to add on a few on some of very specific kind of technical issues emanating from the assessment of the numbers here. Let me start off by responding to Honorable Stan, and maybe let me say thank you very much for the compliments that you've made about the work, and I should be able to get over the frustration that you're experiencing. But the period of which I've been acting now, this is now the fourth year. I've been since 2010, actually. Now, the second question relates to the issue of merging the commissioner grant. I think I'm actually quite glad to hear that in terms of your own assessment and your own oversight experience, these are the kinds of issues, because those are the kinds of issues, if I give you the report, that actually informs that recommendation. I must say that, let me just say that I've been working for the Fisheries and Fiscal Commission for a very long time. And I joined the commission as a commissioner, as a deputy chairman of the commission in 2008. Otherwise, I'd been working in the secretariat of the commission since around about 98, 99. So, I have seen some of these things being introduced, and I had an understanding of why at that particular point it was necessary to do it that way. But as you roll out these things, you experience, you see what the experience is, you can actually tell that maybe we got the design wrong. So when you've got the design wrong, it always makes sense to actually take a step back and say, what can we change to make this work? And I think the issue with this grant in agriculture, we have come with it, I think, at the FFC since 2003. We've been talking about this, and I'm glad that I'm sure, as the chairperson has indicated, there's some work that is now taking place. And one of my program managers, Mr. Dawoodie, is actually part of the trust team that's now reviewing that. But as you say, again, the pace. Because I think the team was set up early last year, if I'm not mistaken, in the first half of last year. But up to today, I haven't had any feedback as to what progress has been made. So it is important in that context then to link some of the questions that have been raised in terms of the cuts that actually happened. Because this grant, even though like in the recent past, they've shown quite an improvement in terms of the performance. They've got a very long history of very poor performance. I mean, in some provinces, you could get zero spending in any 1 year. Zero spending, not because there is no need there, but because there's no one who wants to actually comply with such amount of burden administratively to access such a small amount of money. And that was key. One of the key issues that we were raising at the commission was, if you put this together, you streamline the program, because land reform process and the utilization of that land for food security purposes are two linked processes. So you can't say one without the other, because why are you doing this instead of... So those things basically all must actually be rolled out in tandem. And so in designing a financial or funding framework, you've got to be looking at the bigger picture, because it's going to be a conditional grant. You need to be able to allow the person that makes the decisions at the lower level to be able to respond to the local circumstances. Otherwise, the whole purpose of decentralization then loses meaning. So that is a big question that must be answered by the team that's actually reviewing this. How do you look at these programs at the bigger picture level? And then you can then start looking at how you design the funding framework. So the conditional grants are there. If they are not performing, you know, in terms of the constitution, there's a story there that allows you to stop. Now, if you consistently do it like that, then in times of tight fiscal frameworks, the land performance become the first victims. And that's what happens with this types of plans. They become the soft targets, because, but why do you need it? Because you are spending anyway. So unless and until you demonstrate that you are actually doing something with it, so we'll put it somewhere else where it will be used more effectively. So these are issues that must then be dealt with internally by the department itself. What are the key challenges? And I think it's important to put this in the context of the division of revenue process, because there are all these stories that people get of saying a national department versus a provincial department, there's no, you can't interfere. If you are making a conditional transfer to a provincial department, you are equally accountable, because the constitution inherently gives you that responsibility to exercise oversight. And if there is no capacity which results in understanding, then it's your responsibility as a transferring officer to ensure that such capacity is actually there. And so maybe the conversation that we must have, coming to, you know, how does government actually respond to this? Because there's government and then there's the treasury. Invariably, these recommendations are processed through the National Treasury, then sent through the various budget process forums, like your Minister's Committee on the Budget. And now, what we have been having conversations with the Treasury with is that over time, there's been a lot of recommendations that have been made. So you can respond and say government agrees with this and that, and that, and then there is no follow-up. Right. Where government does not agree, there has also been no follow-up. Now, why I say it in the beginning that our responsibility primarily is to make recommendations to Parliament, the provincial legislatures, organs of state, and organized local government. That's the responsibility that we have. Now, when we make these recommendations, the expectation is that we have empowered Parliament. These recommendations have been referred to the relevant minister, and Parliament will take responsibility for taking the Commission into task about these recommendations, what informed this recommendation, and then Parliament will be able to engage with the executive. So whether it's Minister of Agriculture or it's a minister, they must be able to say, in terms of the submission from the Financial and Fiscal Commission, these recommendations apply to my department, and this is my response to this. Now, National Treasury officials coordinate a process. Now, if there's no responses from the various departments, the National Treasury, please must respond. If there's no responses from there, I would assume that National Treasury will say, but what do we do with this, because this is not our responsibility. So there is a process that must actually take place between the Commission, because what we're trying to do with our submissions to Parliament is that we also are utilizing a vehicle which is called the Office of Institutions Supporting Democracy. So when we table recommendations, we actually put a list of the committees that would like to brief on those recommendations, so that when you discuss these issues, because they do relate to your budget process, so your budget review recommendations report, the minister tables the budget and says, I don't agree with the FSC on these recommendations, and you think otherwise, that should actually include that, and he must respond to you now. When you say, we believe that the FSC is right on this, the FSC provided us with evidence that this is what is actually happening, our oversight experience shows us that, the minister must be able to also come in and say, my officials show me that this is what is thought. So that conversation must take place at a higher level than it currently takes place. Because right now, these responses that we are referring to here, I am not sure that they came from the Department of Agriculture. I cannot vouch for that. But I can say that maybe the National Treasury looked at it and said, no, agriculture did not respond, but we think this is fine. So they probably moved like that. So I'm not saying that's what happened, but I'm saying that conversation, we have not actually had it at that level. And we think that the Money Bill Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act basically presents that opportunity. That's the advantage of this act, is that it allows us to have a conversation with you, with the set of recommendations that we made, with the responses that came from, the minister is obligated to respond when he tables the budget or the division of revenue. The minister is obligated to respond. So we must actually have that conversation. If you don't believe that these were given the appropriate treatment, because sometimes we have had that situation where in the process of technical discussions between our officials of the Commission and officials of the Treasury, we can look at this as a question and say, no, but these people do not apply their minds here. So we can return that and say, no, look, can you please apply your mind to this? Maybe you didn't understand what it means. So we can have that conversation with the National Treasury. But if the relevant department is not there, then there's a problem. But now this process actually allows us to have that conversation, and I get that we are actually having it, even though for some of these issues, the horses might have bolted. But certainly going forward, I think we should be able to bring, because I think some of these issues arise because National Treasury, because of the oversized role that they play on finances, certain departments tend to feel that they are like objective to what the National Treasury says, so we can't actually have this conversation because of the financial. No, that's not the story. The story is about accountability. The story is about priorities, because what drives the budget process is not what somebody sitting in the National Treasury wants. If there is the constraint, this is the fiscal framework, these are the priorities, and they must be funded. So if we say job creation is part of the priorities that government is looking at, now programs that are aimed at facilitating, because government is not about employing people, but must have programs that work to facilitate jobs to be created, and that's the response to the question, that is, what is the risk when you cut year on year, what is the risk? Now, if the program is looking at those numbers and the targets for those programs, you see that the money could be like this, but you are consistently not performing in terms of the programs, you're not meeting the targets that you set yourself, then there's a challenge there in terms of the value that you're generating from money that you're investing. It could be another way, maybe you are setting your targets too high, and you might need to actually interrogate those targets. But if you're not meeting them over the past 3 years, even though you have had some increases over time, and going forward you are now having that because you're not spending the money, but what is it that you're doing? So I think the key around this response is, because this response of cabinet-approved cuts is a response to the tight fiscal environment that we're in. So you are postponing the pay. If you say, no, let's allow you to grow your budget because we have prioritized this and you haven't created sufficient jobs, the pain is going to come. Because what I didn't talk about is what type of fiscal environment what has been sustaining us increasingly, what we've been sustaining ourselves through foreign savings. That means we've been accumulating debt, and quite a big growing chunk of that debt that has been accumulating is owned by foreigners. When the time comes to pay, some of it is quite soon, and when it comes to pay, everything can collapse. And you try to bridge that gap by saying, can we utilize the resources that we have more effectively, which is where I think, Honorable Chair, that is where our relationship with the Public Service Commission is at. I'm sure that you must have picked up in the media that between ourselves and the Public Service Commission, we are looking at a program which broadly speaks about corruption and all of those types of things in terms of how resources are being utilized and wastage of resources. But it's really about the efficiency, technically, in terms of how we actually do the work, which is what the Public Service Commission is interested in. We are interested in, over and above the technical efficiency, we're also interested in the allocative efficiency. Are we allocating resources to the areas of greatest need so that we can be able to deal with the challenges? Because those challenges, we know, it's unemployment, it's an even income distribution, and it's low economic growth. So we have to deal with those challenges. And if we cannot identify where the weak links are in the system, then it becomes a problem. And I think it's important that we do have this kind of conversations. Now, in terms of powers or leverage that the Commission has, I do not actually think that the Commission would need any more powers than it currently has, because the powers that the Commission has, that it must advise, it must make recommendations, provide expert advice to Parliament. So it must strengthen Parliament's footing in assessing or dealing with the financial and fiscal matters of the state. So if the Commission does its work very shoddily, if we present work that is not backed up by evidence to Parliament, Parliament must throw that away. And then maybe we must start saying, do we need people with more skills? Do we have sufficient money to attract the skills that we require? We haven't reached that particular point where we can say, in terms of the core business of the Financial and Fiscal Commission, which is making sure that we provide our stakeholders, especially our primary stakeholders, with sound evidence-based recommendations, I don't think that we are in any way facing any serious risk that would actually affect or have a negative impact on us being able to deliver on our mandate. So, coming back to the issue of the politics, but what one can actually say is that politically, I don't think that there's any threat to the Financial and Fiscal Commission's work. We are actually one of those commissions that have not had any significant, you do have disagreements here. You see, when you are working in the area of finance, and then you try to, because the commission, the way it operates is that it operates directly from constitutional mandate. So you look at Chapter 13, what is required. Because it's an institution supporting democracy, we have to look at the rights of individuals that's guaranteed in Chapter 2 of the Constitution. We then have to look at the mandates for those rights, where are they lying? So if it's education, we know that the provinces have a responsibility in terms of the Constitution to ensure that they provide education. If they have to provide secure school environment as a right, we should be able to say that education needs more money so that they can provide secure school environment. If they must make sure that the kids that go to school are fed, we must be in a position to say that a school child who goes on a hungry stomach or an empty stomach is not going to be able to, and children are entitled to food in terms of the constitution. So you've got all of those rights. Now, if I take a step and make myself the Minister of Finance, because I'm a fan these days, and then I've got all of these departments that have got a responsibility, or these spheres of government that have got a responsibility for ensuring that these are actually achieved. And the constitution is very clear because it talks about progressive realization. Now, you can't have progressive realization if you don't have a plan. So one of the key inputs that the Financial and Fiscal Commission made at the beginning was that we must define a set of norms and standards for all these services that must be provided by the different spheres of government. Now, we are nowhere very close to have done that. And for somebody who works in a financial environment, when you are confronted with these types of realities, then you must say, but where am I going to get the money? Because every time you make this recommendation, it adds on to the state, must not even do this, but if the system itself has not actually responded to that responsibility, that recognizes that there is a constraint, but within that constraint, you are also allowed to progressively realize this right, then that conversation must be had. Now, it brings me back to your issue about the food security and who says local government is not a player in food security. So look at that. If we have not defined it, local government is the sphere that's closest to the people. If it or not, you can come from a national department level and put in something here, and if local government, if the municipality does not have the resources to operate and make sure that that is actually generating the benefits that the people want, they're not going to go to Pretoria. They are going to this municipality. And so it is that dilemma that when you try to look at these things and you look at whether you are allocating sufficient funding, of course, and that is why we think that the Department of Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry must actually be playing a more critical, more direct coordinated role across the three spheres, which we can actually be able to see and say, you know, there's project there that I must say that sometimes I have to spend some time with municipal managers, and they're a very frustrated group of people because they're sitting there, somebody's planning something somewhere, and they come and say, no, this is what we're going to put in this municipality. But the this thing is not part of the plan, it's not part of the IGP. The municipal manager has no money for that. And must we then go to the council and change all of this plan? So you talk to these people, they will raise those kinds of issues. When they change to try and now deal with some of these things that have been imposed there, when they change, then there's an audit issue. There was a general was here, I'm sure, talking about unauthorized, irregular. So all of those things, when you try to link them, even when people are trying to respond to situations as a municipality that are not of your own making, but you have to respond because the people are standing there. They are not waiting for you to go through the relevant processes. They are banning everything. So you've got to be responding to something. And so these issues of coordination are quite critical. In a department like this department, when it comes to issues of job creation, because it's not like you must create jobs, you must create the environment for people to actually be able to work and to be productive, not to employ them, but to be able to work and be productive from the resources that are natural that you actually have, which is what you are actually managing. The risk also that you honorable member also referred to the issue of the share of the fiscal that goes to local government. I think one of the realizations, one of the things that we came to realize probably around about 2002, 2003, was that there was an assumption that local government raises quite a substantial amount of revenues on its own. Yeah. So also, you know, when the economy is doing well, a lot of people are working, a lot of people are paying their bills and all of that. But over time, things changed. The economy, when it's not performing, you must know that local government revenues are going to suffer. So there's a period when there was a substantial increase in local government revenues, and we could comment and deal with that at some other point, driven primarily by the need on the basic services that municipalities are supposed to provide. Now, we have realized that we need to take now a differentiated approach. So that is why we revised the local government equitable share formula over and above the increases, because local the share of local government over the past 8 years has been the fastest growing. Even now, as we say, we are in a difficult position. The share of money that was to local government still remains untouched. It has slowed down in terms of the rate of growth, but it's still positive real growth in allocation to local government. Now, that is a realization that there are significant challenges in the local government, sphere, and that if we do not actually deal with, then there are challenges that we will have to be faced with. Now, the share of local government also has to be looked at not just in the context of that three-way take division. You must also look at it in the manner that the national departments come and spend on their programs in that municipality, which is why it is actually critical that what they do is actually linked to the local government. It cannot be I've had the opportunity of going to some of the committees to on oversight visits where I've seen national department representatives coming into a briefing to an oversight committee, and they are actually saying, no, we're going to cut their money because they are not spending. These are very junior officials as well that are actually sent to some of these things that actually can take accountability because they come from national, they are bigger than. So these are things that we observe, and we need to talk about them and say, how do we actually deal with this kind of, because sometimes it's actually arrogance. And so we need to actually deal with those types of things. There is, obviously, that threaten some of the successes that we want to deal with. I've dealt with the issue of the year-on-year. The cost of establishing a single sustainable job in the agricultural sector, I must say I don't have any number for that, but we can try and get you a number for that. But one thing that we know is that most of the jobs that are being created in the agricultural sector are not permanent jobs. They are temporary or slash seasonal types of jobs. So that's not sustainable. So we need to actually think a little bit more. It's really more about the sector, not just the farm, but it's the sector and the downstream linkages that the agricultural sector can actually create. The reasons for underspending, I will leave Sasha to answer that. Now let me go to the budget versus the target achievement. I think I probably have responded to this, that you know, when you have your budget increasing but you are not meeting your targets, it obviously means that there is inefficiencies that are in the system. It's either you're allocating your money to the wrong thing, or technically you are producing with the wrong combination of factors of production, if I want to talk like an economist. So, but the point is, like, there are inefficiencies that are in the system that need to be addressed. Let's see, the other question, Chairperson, that you raised. Okay, basically I think I've responded. It is also the issue of what the role of national department must be when you transfer money to the provinces. Sometimes the national departments, let's say if I look at across the board, you will find that national departments that have transferred money either to municipalities or to provinces, we have a nice picture there. That's the money that they transferred. So it can be reflected as expenditure. But because we don't just look at that national level, we also have to go down to the bottom. You find that the money that was transferred has not been spent. So, in terms of the achievement, so if you look at the difference in the achievement, but when you start counting, let's say you're looking at houses, human settlements, you start counting the houses, because the target at the international level, this is what, how many we must have, so you calculate everything, this province is going to have this much, this province is going to have. So now when you calculate at the end of the year, you find that consistently, you have produced less houses than you said you would produce, even though the money has been increasing. So we can find reasons, but sometimes the money has not been spent, but it's reflected from you as money that has been spent, because you just simply transferred it to somebody, and that somebody has not spent the money. So the houses have not been built, and so on and so on. Let me ask Sasha to respond to the one or two questions. Oh, let me, the climate change issue. I think it's important that I actually inform this committee that we have been working together. I like your story about the agreement at the strategic level, African level, agriculture. There's an organization called FANPAN, Food, Agriculture, Natural Resources, that works on these agriculture issues, and they put a motto that says no agriculture, no deal. I don't know what it means. That basically means that we need to put agriculture at the forefront. We have worked with them, together with the University of Cape Town, the University of Fort Hare, and the University of Venda. We chose those two provinces, Eastern Cape and Western Cape, but we used UCT because they've got probably one of the best air exchange modeling capacity in the country, and in fact they've got the best, that it's a world-class climate center that they have in UCT. So we worked with them on a report that we are actually just finalizing, which was funded by the IDFC, which basically begins to tell us some stories about the vulnerability of communities and their coping mechanisms or instruments of coping, with specific reference to some areas of Eastern Cape and some areas of Limpopo. Now the University of Venda team have gone down to now deal with their local government or municipalities within to actually get even further information on that. But we finalized the report, and I think because once the people, one of the people that we work with in that is actually people from the Department of Agriculture that represent the Department of Agriculture on the board of FANPAN. So we will basically be finalizing the support, and I'm sure we will be able to table it. And I think the biggest beneficiary for that in terms of portfolio committees is probably your portfolio committee, even though our interest was in looking at how we can redesign our poverty components in the equitable share formula. The result basically indicates that there are serious issues around food security and how people in these rural areas are actually coping. So it will be interesting once we finalize that, Jefferson will keep the committee posted so that we can come and share the results of that report. I'm sure it will be before the end of the year. Let me ask Sasha to just respond to the outstanding. FANPAN.
I think my chair has covered the bulk. There were just two questions relating to underspending. The honourable member stepped out, but he asked the question about underspending with respect to the marine entity. And the underspending performance there has been driven by underspending on the working for fisheries program. And that underspending on the working for fisheries program in turn is being driven by continued deferment of funds. So the entity doesn't spend in a particular year. The funds are deferred to the next year, and then in the following year they are still incapable of absorbing those funds, and it continues. So the 2013-14 situation is again that the funds have been deferred, so the likelihood is that we're again see understanding coming out from this entity. The other question relating to general understanding by the department. Honorable member, on slide 16, there's a list of the reasons driving underspending each of the department's programs. But generally, underspending is being driven whether at the national level or by provinces on the conditional grants is being driven by delays or incomplete procurement processes. And this directly relates to the need for tightening of planning and internal controls. But as part of our 2015-16 recommendations, which government has yet to respond to, we actually go as far as suggesting that these procurement processes be streamlined, and we look at how the role of the chief procurement officer, what role that office can play in assisting and improving procurement processes. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner, and your team. Do we still have anything to raise, members? Commissioner, Honorable Stan?
Chairperson, just one last concern. If, for instance, one province, and I saw many of your recommendations linked to performance, which I think is good. I'm back to that cost cut. I'm really concerned about that, although I understand it. And I think maybe we discussed a lot of issues, but for me, I highlighted one sentence here, if I can find it again. It says here, the Commission noted the decline in the allocation to agriculture, forestry and fisheries and reiterated the need to improve planning and procurement processes. My understanding, and maybe I'm wrong, but we will discuss on Thursday with the department, is that there is not enough planning in this department. I don't understand why a budget has been cut. If you can't put a plan on the table, how it's going to be spent. And then you put the plan on the table, and then you don't spend the money, so you know, I can understand that. My question would be recommendations to provinces. If they do consistently spend their money, and they can provide a plan, because it's a link between national and provinces, could there be something that a province for a specific project could get more money, although a specific national will be cut? Because if you are the link between provinces and national, we have the frustration that we get a national budget and then the national department divides its provinces. But if certain provinces constantly use the money for the proposed effect, would there be some kind of a proposal sometime that we can look into that? Because, you know, I think it's unfair, because if you look at, especially on the slides that you did not handle, but that we saw with the Auditor General, we are consistently good-spending provinces, and then we are consistently underspending provinces. Now it seems to me like everyone is going to be punished for consistently underspending provinces.
No, I think we agree. Some of these things belong to the House. House means us, because my understanding or my view is that even ourselves, the way we handle matters of Parliament, we need to change, because we cannot continue to monitor agriculture in the Parliament, in the offices. We must go on the ground so that we are able to pick up those issues and have relevant information to argue your case. You see, the issue of conditional grants. If you, department, since I came here, they can't even account for that money. They don't know how many small farmers they've assisted and where are they. Whether the money that we've appropriated has been given to somebody else, not a farmer, we don't even know. But we had Parliament since 1994. I think one of the things is that besides becoming so frustrated and on the chair, we must start to say we want to go there and see where this money is, so that we are able to
to give meaning to all these issues, because these meetings of boardrooms every day does not actually help this government, because you have officials that are very, very lazy, if you may say so. You have those that, you must agree that the sunset clause is still dealing with us. And it's us who have agreed on, and we must make it sure that those that want to work remain within the system, those that they don't want work, they must go out of the system. That's the only source. Because if you look, we're debating about whether the budget is aligned to the priorities. All of us who agree in paper, yes, but go on the ground, you'll get something different. And it's about all of us. It shouldn't be, if the commission, few of them, few as they are, they're able to go to Venda and Eastern Cape. As being 400, we can't even go to Eastern Cape or, but we want to monitor the man, we want to play oversight over executive. It's not possible. And I think as members of parliament, we should actually start to demand our space to go and do the oversight, to make sure that things that we are looking here are happening on the ground, that sitting here every now and then get frustrated, asking numbers, which does not help. Our people cannot eat numbers and the English that we speak in the offices. They are actually tired of those things. And in 20 years, if indeed South Africa has to be serious, we must change the manner in which we operate and have all of us been committed without being an official politician. We must just change the way we've been doing things and say people cannot wait forever. Commissioner, I wanted to say something.
Just to say that, I do understand the honourable member's concern that if there's some perennial provinces that are actually perennially they are there, they should not actually be they should not be the bane of everybody else. Yeah, I think that's perfectly a correct position to take. But you see, when I was referring to the issue of the Division of Revenue Act, where we have tried now to ensure that accounting officers at a national level must also be equally accountable for conditional grants that they actually transfer, because they actually bid for those conditional grants themselves. Now, if you are going to come and say, no, there are these programs that we want to do from a conditional grant, instead of saying, no, let's just push everything through the equitable share, you say, no, we want a conditional grant, because then you should be able to actually trace an account for why it's not happening. So in some sectors or in some departments, if you take human settlements, for example, where provinces have not performed, because they've got a plan, in the sector there's a plan that this is what money is going to be used for. So if a province does not perform now, and then the plan that says, no, this is how we're going to intervene to enable this province to perform, that money can be shifted and sent to another province that's performing, and then it will come back. So it doesn't leave the sector, you know what I'm saying? But you need to have solid plans around these things. If I used to say a long time ago when these grants started, like our CAST and all of that, I used to say, no, these are grants that we introduced because we had so much surpluses, we didn't know what to do with some of the money. So we needed to resuscitate agriculture and industry. That was a kind of a joke story that we tell when I was still a researcher at the RSC. But I'm saying it can't be treated as if it's a by the way. It's not a by the way. If it's small, but the objective is this big, by now it should have grown even bigger. Because there is this realization that we are actually behind on a lot of things. Food security is a big deal, but we are behind. So these things require, and really the issue of planning is a big deal. I think National Treasury has tried to set up structures within the Treasury that assist departments in doing some of these things, especially relating to projects funded via conditional grants, but I am not sure to what extent those are utilized by the different departments. And maybe some departments use them more than others, but they are there. Hopefully once the review of this grant has been completed, then we will probably be able to know what the way forward actually is. But I would strongly suggest to this committee that maybe we need to put a little bit of urgency to that review so that we can actually deal with the issues.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I think we've noted that the issue of phasing of the grant we prioritize it every now and then as we meet the department. We were asking the same question, and I think members there here, we have to pressure the department to finalize it. But you see, one of the things that as government or as parliament that we must never allow to make our people to pay for the sins that they have not committed. This thing of officials, they have not been employed by those officials or our people. It's us who have employed them. And we must make them to work if such that you don't have end up having a particular province, people must die because we have employed a group of people that does not want to do the work. We shouldn't actually as government ever agree to that notion. And I agree with you, Commissioner, that you know what happened in Limpopo? It was a good sign of government. Having presidency and other team to go and take over the powers of MECs and do the work. That's what we expect government to do. Where there's no service delivery, we must do it everywhere. Even departments, I expect them to say, if this province is not doing the work, you don't take it to other province. You must go and do the work. You have actually went to National Treasury and demand that money that you're going to provide people with services. You don't actually transfer it to other departments. Those poor people, particularly who have inherited the Pakistan government, will suffer forever. We've not allowed that system as government. We must just make everybody to work. And Commissioner, thank you very much. We hope we're still going to engage further. Probably these 5 years we might have an interesting 5 years through your support and our support. We might change the life of our people to better. And thank you very much. You are invited to lunch with our agenda now is 2:15. Let's come back, only have 30 minutes break and come back then. 15 minutes, not possible. Thank you very much.